Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Welcome to Review Time's Theme Park Cast. This is a fortnightly show where we explore the ins and outs of attractions and theme parks from around the world. This week, we are exploring modern classics, an idea inspired by the Disney Dish podcast, where we look at any attraction from the year 2000 and see whether it falls into that same category of being a real Disney classic. But before we get into that, we need to introduce the man who reminds us that crystals can actually heal you if you have a sodium deficiency. It's Review Time co-host Luke Carroll.
Not bad. Not bad. I'm here. And as we're saying... A nice honorary homage to our favorite Disney podcast, of course, The Disney Dish with Jim Hill and Len Tester. They were talking about this episode that I was listening to. I was like, that's a really good idea. And, you know, we haven't talked about it between each other. We've each got a list with some honorary mentions and then our top five. And we're going to compare and see who's got the edgiest takes.
The other thing that makes it really interesting is the only criteria is that it's from the year 2000. So anything before then is disqualified. But beyond that, it's our own criteria. So yeah. Luke's sort of criteria could be like, hey, it's based off the most popular, or mine could be it's like the best music or anything like that. We won't know until we start exploring them. But
if you've picked your top five based off the best music only, I'm going to be shook.
So, number one, test track. Number two.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'd allow that.
That's fair. Yeah, exactly. But,
and yeah, I think when we think, that's the thing. When you think of Disney and you think of, you know, classics, you usually go back in time. You think of, you know, Haunted Mansion. You think of Pirates of the Caribbean. But those attractions are, you know, 60 plus years old almost at this stage. So, what's going to be the classics, you know, 60 in 2050? That's what we're going to try and answer today. Yeah.
You're trying to think, like, what are people going to be putting alongside your Pirates of the Caribbean, your Haunted Mansions, when they go way into the future? And it's like, oh, I love my Disney classics like Rise of the Resistance. Not sure if you've got that one on your list. I maybe don't. That could be a spoiler.
Oh, spoiler alert. I think we're going to be similar but different between the two of us. We have very different experiences in theme parks. We have different things that we look for, but should we go through our honorary mentions first? Do you have any?
Yeah, sure. So, well, I guess we should preface it by saying that, as you said before, the classics sort of determine a shift in either the industry or technology used. It's something that is groundbreaking and different and that makes people really sort of gravitate towards it. So as you mentioned, your Pirates of the Caribbean and your Haunted Mansions. Haunted Mansion used a completely new and innovative ride system as well, combined with like the music and the animatronics and the setting. And Pirates of the Caribbean was very similar. That was like just everything combined just made it something that you wanted to go out of your way to visit and was integral to the Disney experience. So that's sort of
a lot of
what
them,
we're getting at with the classics.
Changed the industry as well. Like, it changed the way that a lot of theme parks, not just Disney, thought about, you know, storytelling in attractions. Look how many parks out there in the world have a rip-off or had a rip-off Pirates of the Caribbean ride. Like, it created... And then...
They popped up and then disappeared.
Yeah, the one that's surviving, obviously, Pirates of the Caribbean at the Disney parks, and then the Pirates in Batavia in Europa Park.
Yeah, which sadly the original version burnt down, didn't it?
Yeah, but they rebuilt it, and the new one's apparently really cool.
Ah, interesting. I didn't see that it was rebuilt. I didn't know whether it was open yet. So that's nice to know. But I'm happy to go through my honorable mentions.
Yeah,
one of them we've already touched on before. Did we want to go sort of person to person or just give out our list?
Yeah, sure. I've got honorary mentions for me. No particular order. I'm guessing the same for you.
Same for me, as well as my list, like my proper list of classics.
Oh, mine are in order. Ooh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how mine sort of correlate with that. I've saved my most shocking for the end because there is one that I know is going to really upset you, but I think
it's Pixar Pal-Around, isn't it? It's Pixar Pal-Around. Yeah.
That's when you look around all Disney theme parks, what do you see? Pixar Pal-Around. It's everywhere. It's a classic. So my first honorable mention was actually one that we mentioned before, is Test Track. My main reason for saying this is that it opened slightly too early. So it opened in 1997. But I do think that the technology sort of gave way for different iterations and different ideas. Like we went from Test Track to then Cars Land. And it's something that Disney has sort of expanded upon over time. I think it's also integral to the Epcot experience.
Yeah, well, you can kind of say Test Track because the sequel, in inverted commas, opened in 2012. But
no, the
most people
sucks.
Think that's a weaker version of the ride. So that makes sense. In connection to that, an honorary mention for me, which it may be a shock, and the why will become more apparent later, is Radiator Springs Races is actually an honorary mention for me. You'll figure out why when we get actually into the what did make the top five. But this is probably still my favorite ride at Disney California Adventure today. It is kind of, to me, this ride itself is indicative of the big multi-year changes that DCA went through. And this is those changes in a nutshell. It's an incredible ride, unique to the park. Just really fun as well, which you can sometimes not get in rides that you're like, yeah, that's really good, but not that fun. But no, just an all-around awesome package ride.
I'm going to say something a little bit spicy, but I'm going to say that a lot of these are probably from what I'm going to label as the Disney theme park's Renaissance.
Welcome to the Renaissance.
But I feel like there's a portion there. It's sort of, you know it when you look at it, but if you look through all of the attractions, it's like, this is top quality changes, top quality additions. And then we kind of start to slide off the edge as we, not even because of the COVID-19 pandemic, it was kind of, it's starting to happen a bit beforehand where things were starting to slip. And then post COVID, it's just been like, what are you doing there, Disney?
I think Guardians... The new Guardians ride at Epcot will be an interesting look into the future of Disney parks because obviously the last major attraction they opened was Ratatouille at Epcot, which is a carbon copy ride. But then if you look before that, you've got Rise of the Resistance. So it's going to be interesting to see what their next, you know, we've got quite a few Marvel rides at this point, but this is really the first kind of fully ground up Marvel ride.
Yeah.
We've got Spider-Man. I don't count that. It's too similar. where, you know, like Iron Man experience is kind of, Star Tours themes to Marvel. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, fully ground up. Some stuff we're coming out of it looks cool. Other parts look, So it'll be interesting to see when it opens in a couple of months, I believe.
You sent me through a couple of pictures from Guardians and, you know, we are starting to get more and more leaks and official images coming out. One of the big things that's bothering me, and this is something that's really common in modern Disney, is that it's really sort of big picture stuff, but the smaller detail just isn't quite there. And it's something I've noticed in a lot of different sort of Imagineering jobs that have been happening post COVID-19 is that it's like, yes, as a whole, it looks spectacular and it's world class, but it's that little details, those little things that sort of bring everything together and just like things like the tomato sauce and the barbecue sauce and mustard in Dinosaur.
Thanks, McDonald's sponsorship. Kingdom. Thanks, McDonald's. Yeah.
But like that sort of stuff. And when looking at these pictures, it's not, it doesn't have those details. Yeah. It's hard to explain, but it's when you look at that and then say, compare that to older attractions that opened a decade before. And it's like, wow, there's a lot going on in those pictures. The big picture is still great, but when you're actually in those queues and you look around the walls and you look at the details, you've got things to enjoy. But I think that also comes out of, I believe there was somebody in management who was saying that it's not worth them investing that time, that energy into it anymore, because people just spend all their time on their phones
looking
anyway.
Down. Yeah.
Which,
I've heard that.
There's also studies coming out that people are actually not buying as many phones and laptops anymore. That does come out from the fact that, you know, during COVID, everyone needed them for working from home and all of that.
Yeah.
But they're seeing a significant slowdown, and technology trends do see a massive uptick and then sort of a stabilization. And we're starting to see dumb phones, which are kind of like, they do your text messaging, they do basic apps, but it's nothing like, you can't open
TikTok.
No
lightning lane for you.
Yeah. And
what a shame.
I kind of enjoy that as well. Like, the coolest thing about my phone is that it is a camera and a video recorder, and I can do anything on it. But at the same time, it's also introducing all of those stresses that I would like to leave behind on my holiday into my holiday. So that's just my little rant. Anyway,
what's your next honorary mention?
My other honorary, I have a couple here, so I'm not sure how many you have. So
I
we could have
four.
I have five, so that kind of works.
Oh, that works.
So my second honorable mention is Pooh's Honey Hunt. Mm. Now, my reasoning behind this is that I think spectacular technology. This was the first ever attraction to use the trackless dark ride technology, but I do feel that it doesn't fully embrace its potential. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where there are certain parts where you can tell that they're like, hey, look, don't go too hard with this new technology. Yeah. And it's really good, but I think that there are other attractions which have done it better. So that's a little spoiler as well.
I've got Pooh's Honey Hunt in my honorary mentions as well. Part of that is because there's already at least one trackless dark ride in my propers. So I was like, well, I don't want it. Just if I had just listed every trackless dark ride, maybe that would be the top five. No, I haven't been on Ratatouille, and Luigi's Roller Licking Roadsters maybe might just miss out.
That's
if it was all
one.
Trackless dark rides. But it's the one that started it all. If we look at so many of the praised Disney attractions in the last, you know, 10, 20 years, a lot of them have some basis in this trackless system. And yeah, it was a super cool test, and it's really cool the stuff they've done with it now. It's one of the best rides still at Tokyo Disneyland Park, which says a lot, you know, over 20 years since it opened. It opened in 2000, right? So yeah, 20-something years later.
We both sort of had the same one. Where do
we go
from here?
Well, go back to you, because you got five and I've only got four.
No, I actually realized I have six.
Oh, you're just listing every ride that opened. They haven't opened many rides lately.
Maybe this should have been a top 10. We can come back and expand on these in a future list of modern classics.
What else do you got? What else?
So I've got Pirates in Shanghai. So my reasoning behind this is I haven't... We've got the same honorable mention. What is the chance that we have the exact same list as well?
Yeah, maybe.
My reasoning behind this, I haven't ridden it, and specifically put attractions that I haven't ridden here, but it does expand on the classic whilst adding a modern flair. And I think that is something that is very difficult to do, and they did it right. Like, the new iteration of this attraction is just spectacular. As I said, I've only seen it through POVs, but from everything I've heard, it is just outstanding.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, I'm 100% sure this would be in my top five if I had ridden it, which I haven't. But I want to. So
one day,
if we do this again, I wouldn't be surprised if this cracked into my top five, you know, favorite dark rides once I get the chance to ride it. So hopefully sometime soon. One of my other honorary mentions, my last honorary mention here is actually Soarin'. So if it was still Soarin' Over California permanently at Disney California Adventure, I would probably put this in the top five. I don't like Soarin' Around the World. So they've actually downgraded the attraction, which is kind of the opposite of being a modern Marvel, where now they're like, oh, bringing it back for Food and Wine Festival at DCA. And the last time I rode it, it was the new 4K crisp Soarin' Over California in Disney California Adventure. And to me, that is the way to ride it. That's what should be in that park all the time.
I agree, that especially for Soarin' Over California. Now, that it's not in my honorable mentions, but I do think that why shouldn't it just be at California? It gives you an opportunity to have different attractions. I know that's scary, Disney. Not all your theme parks have to be exactly the same. So for my next one, I have 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea at Tokyo Disney Sea. Yeah, my reasoning behind this, now this was very close to getting onto my actual list. Ooh. Like it would probably be my number six if everything else was numbered. But my reasoning behind it is because it's a proper practical dark ride. It uses a really unique ride system, and the story is basic, but it's effective. Like everything it does right. And just the whole experience is spectacular. It's hard to get across what it's like in a POV. So usually people who have visited Tokyo DisneySea can appreciate a little bit more why it's so good. Like little things, like when your submarine comes in, it's dripping and beneath you is water, and then you go
It's so well designed. It's insane.
Like it's next level. It is a modern dark ride. I think the only thing letting it down is its premise, because it's kind of an older story. I think it is probably on the chopping block to be updated to an IP.
I reckon it may be safe just because it's so integrated into the mountain.
Yeah, true.
Like it's hard to just put an IP into that ride sort of thing.
I guess you could just tear it all out.
No, oh, good luck with that. Oh, I don't have any other honorary mentions. So what's your last one? And then we'll jump into the top five.
Oh, I've got two more, but I'll be really quick. So this one is literally my reasoning behind this is Rise of the Resistance, probably good, haven't ridden it. Mm. And then Flights of Passage, my reasoning behind that is I have ridden this one, but I think it's just on the cusp of being a classic. It does spectacular things, but at the same time, it's got a weird premise. I don't think it's something that everyone's into. Avatar is expected to get bigger when they finally release Avatar 2 in 2045. But it's also that thing where it's like, I kind of see a classic as something that you can easily expand upon. You can bring into other parks and is part of that Disney experience. And as it stands, Flights of Passage isn't quite there, but maybe one day.
Ooh, which leaves us with five. So for me, like categorically, I'm not going to say that, you know, this top five are my top five Disney attractions in this specific order. But I think these are just, you know, the most iconic since the year 2000 and likely to influence Disney moving forward with choices that they make. But also most of these are probably in my top 10 favorite rides, like theme park rides, not category roller coasters of all time, which I always find it really hard when people are like, oh, here's my favorite rides of all time. And they'll mix like roller coasters and dark rides. Where to me, they're two completely separate things. You can't compare them. Like, you can't be like, oh, number one is, I don't know, a roller coaster. And then number two is a fully immersive dark ride. Like,
yeah, they'll be like, oh, number one is DC Rivals at Movie World. And then number two is Mystic Manor at Hong Kong. Yeah. And it's like, they're just completely different things. Mm. Basically, whenever I hear somebody say those, I'm like, they're both number one of different categories.
That's I've always had like my number one dark ride category, which I essentially just count everything that isn't roller coasters or flat rides. And then I have like my favorite roller coasters completely separate. But seeing as mine's in an order, do we want me to go? And then if one of yours happens to match up with the one I'm saying, you can just jump in and say that's one of yours as well.
Yeah, sounds
good. All right. Number five for me, it is, in my opinion, Disney's best ever roller coaster, Expedition Everest.
I also have this.
Yeah. I put it at number five, though.
I was confident putting in the top five, but only at number five.
Mm.
There's a Yeti in the room. There's an elephant in the room. Unfortunately, yeah. Did you ever watch the Joe Rohde special Travel Channel 45-minute documentary about this?
Did I watch it? Oh. I lived it.
That made this Yeti animatronic look like the coolest thing in the world. And that's the closest we've ever got to seeing it working. Like, it's behind this kind of shower curtain almost, like this giant shower curtain. You can't really see it. You just see its shadow and the movement.
If you kind of want a good mental image, it's like the operation scene in E.T. where they set up all of that plastic around and everyone's there crying.
Yeah.
That's Joe Rohde when he found out that the Yeti didn't work.
Oh, God. But other than that, this to me, this is Disney's best roller coaster experience because it's a quintessentially Disney roller coaster experience.
Yeah.
The story is so insanely deep that you could spend hours going through the queue, reading every piece of paper, reading everything, and you'll get a super good, deep understanding of this attraction. Or you can just walk into the queue, sit down, and have a fun time. Like, it's got something for everyone, whether you want that nitty-gritty, you know, the backstory of the tea company and the, you know, then the other company comes in and then, you know, you're not actually going to Everest. You're going to the Forbidden Mountain, like all these sort of things that most people wouldn't know or care about. But it's not going to stop them from having a great time.
And this is one of the things that I was mentioning before that I find that Disney sort of isn't doing anymore is that it is that thing where if you want to look harder, there are things to find.
So much
and
to say, yeah.
That's something that I just think really made them different. And it's kind of now what you see is what you get.
Or they'll do a thing where it's like, no, 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 there's more to see. You just got to get out your phone, open up the Play Disney Parks app,
no!
Go to the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge version, choose your team, and now scan this QR code and sit and look at your phone for the next 5 minutes reading text. Like, oh.
I was really upset about that because I remember them talking about like, oh, Galaxy's Edge, it's going to be dynamic through the day based on what you do, could have different outcomes. And I was like, they're going to have these cool stuff where imagine like you go into Galaxy's Edge at the start of the day and you've got sort of equal sides and there are people like, you want to be the Resistance or you want to be the First Order. And then based off what people do through the app, like it could be super simple, just have banners that come down. And it's like, at the end of the day, if people do First Order stuff, then the lighting is a bit more First Order-y and there are First Order banners everywhere. And you could literally just have, like, the jewel curtains, you know, where they have, like, a blackout curtain, their mesh curtain, and you can pull one up and pull down the other. Just do that.
I've heard rumors that the Magic Band Plus system will introduce some of the trackability that was promised with Galaxy's Edge. So, you know, if you crash the Millennium Falcon, for example, because from what I've heard, they already integrated that into Galaxy's Edge, into cash registers and stuff like that. Mm. There is a system for that. And the talking to people, rumor is that, yeah, it may be brought in with Magic Band Plus, but you shouldn't have to buy a $60 or whatever bracelet with LED lights that you have to charge to
get
that experience.
The problem, though, and I think it is wise to have it where it's like, hey, the person who's paying $60 is probably into these experiences. But could you imagine, like, you've got your dad with you. He's not interested in the park experience. Cliche dad is just there because everyone else is having a good time. And then he goes on to Smuggler's Run. He's just sitting there. He's just kind of enjoying the scenery. Doesn't really know what's going on. Pushes a button every now and then. Then he goes into the shop to buy something. And then they're like bad mouthing him because he crashed the ship. And he's
what the hell, bloody idiot. Because remember they did that test. I'm not sure if you remember. It was a few years before Galaxy's Edge opened in Frontierland. There was like an interactive story in Frontierland.
Yeah, that had
Legends of the
Tony
West
Baxter in it, didn't it?
Yeah, as the Tony Baxter, remember, is the guy who owns Big Thunder Mountain Mining. Like,
yeah,
he looks like Tony Baxter.
But that was a test for Galaxy's Edge. But the big thing about that, from what I heard, was that was an opt-in system, which they found worked well, where, yeah, like you're saying, if it becomes a everyone has to take part, you're going to get, you know, told off by car. Some guests will just be like, nope, don't want, don't like.
Yeah, please do not interact with me. So some of the other reasons that I put down as to why Expedition Everest, just bringing it back, is sort of spectacular in my books and is a modern classic. It took the roller coaster to the next level and expanded on Big Thunder, which was already great. It was also expanded upon further, not in quite the way you think, but the technology and the ideas used gave us Grizzly Gulch at Hong Kong Disneyland. That was one of the things that I thought was necessary for a modern classic, is that it shouldn't just be a one and done.
You
and this is something I think we should do as an episode in the future, to talk about some of Disney's just like, you know, like Mulholland Madness or Goofy's Sky School. Like, they just built a wild mouse and then called it a day. They've never done anything like that again. And I'd love to talk about those attractions, but that's sort of what I thought was quintessential to the modern classic ideology.
Yeah,
and now it has its faults, but I also think that it makes Animal Kingdom the park it is today. I don't think it would be anywhere near as successful without it. And the technology
and
the spectacle are unmatched.
That's what stopped it being the dreaded half-day park.
Like, oh no, please.
That is the attraction that stopped it from being seen as a half day park. Obviously, it's also the attraction that made us lose Beastly Kingdom, but it's still an incredible ride. It is one of the most impressive ride facades anywhere in the world. I don't think that's up for debate. It's beautifully designed within the park. There is some incredible vistas that you get thanks to this attraction. Like, as an all around package, a big physical ride that has the thrills, it has the story, it has, you know, an animatronic, rest in peace. But yeah, overall, easily slotting into the top five. This shows what Disney, I feel as well, like this shows what Disney knew how to do at the time. And even though, you know, you can't exactly trace the steps of where this led and why it's, you know, influenced other things, there's a lot of stuff that you can go, Disney's embracing of this led to this. Like, anything that's been added, Pandora, you can trace back to, you know, Expedition Everest. Number four for me, one I know probably won't be in yours, and I'm going to have to explain myself. Number four is Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, a Disney California Adventure.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because... this is on my top five, other than the fact I really like this ride. To me, this is Disney's best ever attraction overlay. It shows what Disney can do. It shows that, you know, this may not be a ground-up attraction, but it is, to me, the definition of what a good overlay looks like. Some theme park rides can't be here forever. This is a perfect example of how you can change a ride so it feels completely different without, you know, tearing it down and having to rebuild it from scratch.
I get that.
And I'll always argue that this version is better than the Tower of Terror that used to be at Disney California Adventure. But that's only because the better Tower of Terror already existed on the other side of the country. So you're always going to compare the two versions of Tower of Terror, and the DCA one was worse. You can't really compare this to Tower of Terror anymore. So now they just stand alone as their old attraction. And hopefully, any attraction that gets an overlay, I hope now it's done in the style of Mission Breakout, where it makes it feel completely different.
Yeah, I get that. I think that's a very fair reason. I haven't had the opportunity to experience this, but I was hoping to save my spicy choice of classic attractions for the end, but it is sort of in line with this, so I think I'll just go out and say it now. My sort of theoretical number four, there's no list to mine. They all are. But mine is Tower of Terror, the Disney's California Adventure version. My reason being, and I know that you will be like, you're wrong, you're an idiot. Kind of similar to based off what you said. I think that the Tower of Terror, despite being a simpler version than what was at Disney's Hollywood Studios, and it's hard because you're sort of comparing two things with the exact same name, but they are different attractions. So I'm talking about the DCA version, which is a little bit smaller. It has helped out two struggling theme parks survive major problems. Like, this is the reason that DCA sort of started to get onto the map. It's also easily adjustable because, as you said, you can then turn it into something else. You can either change the ride sort of computer system, or you can completely change the theme, and it all sort of fits within that drop system design. It fits on really simple plots. You don't need a lot of land for it. It also creates an incredible visual weenie for neighboring parks. It's something that if you're at Disneyland and you look over and you're like, wow, what is that? It really helps to sort of sell the other park to people. And whilst we don't have any solid costs on how much this actually costs to make, the simpler technology likely makes it cheaper than the original $140 million US dollar version that was built at Disney Hollywood Studios.
I always heard this one was almost as much for some reason. I don't know why.
So what you may have heard,
but it is like 10 years later, so.
Yeah, so in Paris, I tried to find some more information on this, and the best that I could get is that the Paris version was more expensive, but the reason being is that Paris construction laws require you to have a concrete frame instead of a steel frame, and that caused it to be more expensive than the version at Disney's California Adventure, despite being the exact same ride system. So that's sort of where I kind of got the idea where if it's like it's 140 million euros, then they're also saying that it was more expensive. So kind of maybe you could say that the DCA version was cheaper, but it's still very tall and going vertical is expensive.
Yeah. So interestingly to me in that I haven't ridden the Paris version and the Paris version's recently had a big refurb, which has changed it up a lot. But of the ones I've ridden, I would say the top is obviously Disney Hollywood Studios. Number two for me is Mission Breakout. Number three for me is Tower at Disney Sea. Then the worst for me is, interestingly, Tower at DCA, which I would have said if you're going to talk about modern Marvels, the Tower at Tokyo, I guess. But
no, so my reasoning is that this was the new iteration after the Disney Hollywood Studios version. So everything then came after this. So you can't have the Disney Sea and the Paris version without this one coming first.
Well,
I
reckon Tokyo would have just paid the money to build the more expensive version.
Oh, 100%.
Knowing Tokyo. but I'd have to know the numbers. Like, if this saved $50 million, sure, it's worth it. If this saved $5 million, I think the loss in the experience isn't worth the 3% saving. Like, and I, from what I understand, it wasn't just a cost saving. It was also a speed saving. You know, DCA needed something big, something thrilling and quick. It had, you know, had Bugs Land in that way to try to get the kids and families in, and then needed something unique to bring the thrill seekers in.
So that's sort of how I see it, is it's like you can't really, well, it'd be really hard to put a price on it, because how do you put a price on saving a theme park? So it's like
$1.2 billion. Is it $2 billion? Was it for DCA? 1.2? I can't remember.
Yeah, it still wasn't enough, but it did help.
Yeah.
So that's sort of why I see it. It's controversial, I know, but I do think that it is. Like, considering how much has come out of that iteration of the attraction, like, we only have one version of the Hollywood Studios one, but we have three versions of the one. Well, technically now four of the one that was opened at DCA. So that's sort of my reasoning, is that it must have done something right.
It'd be interesting to see if the old system has the capabilities to even do the Guardians style of movement. Which is quite different, because the towers in movement did always feel quite different to me, the DCA one and the Hollywood Studios one. I was just lucky enough that I did a trip when I worked over in the US where I had ridden them, you know, within a few days of each other, and was more easily able to tell the kind of the difference in the actual drop feeling and profile and stuff like that between the two. But yeah, moving on from me, number three, I have Journey to the Center of the Earth at Tokyo Disney Sea. To me, when I said an honorary mention of Radiator Springs Races that will become apparent later, for me, Radiator Springs Races just kind of feels like a better extended version of Test Track, where this uses the same ride system in a completely different way and turns it into a fully unique experience. And like, then I think they kind of went, this could have very much been what made them go, Radiator Springs Races, oh, we can actually use this system to tell a story.
Yeah.
Like, this is just, this is more dark ride than, you know, thrill ride, even though it has the thrilling element at the end, just like Radiator Springs Races. It's more dark ride than thrill ride, where Test Track, the dark ride section's a bit eh. It's more thrill ride than dark ride. This is the one where they've kind of used the system, I feel, in the coolest way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, I don't have this one in my list, but I've got a couple others that might be kind of similar, but I absolutely agree that they kind of have the perfect balance here with an attraction that can go up to the speeds of roller coasters without the limitations of having to take a roller coaster through tracks in a slow fashion. Like, if you think about Superman Escape at Movie World, the amount of steel and tires and motors and all sorts of things that you need to get the actual roller coaster up to the area where it then gets launched, that's a lot. Like, apparently that was half the cost of the attraction. Mm-hmm. I need to double check all the stats, but just because moving roller coasters, considering how large they are, they're heavy, they're tough to get around. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you can easily do. Whereas the slot car system, which is sort of your Test Tracks and all of that, does give that capability. And exactly as you said, it does seem like they kind of went, wait, we can use this to tell a story.
Yeah, because it's that thing where if you're on Test Track, you're on Radiator Springs Races, you always can look down and see the slot car ride system. You can see where you're about to go. Where in the dark ride sections, especially of this, you don't really notice that. It's still there, but it's designed in such a way that you don't notice it because it's not designed to be a car. It's not like, you know, Test Track or Radiator Springs where you're in a car. It makes sense for you to see the slot car ride system. We're here, it's using that system to tell a story. It's got one of the best animatronics of all time, which, you know, helps it a lot. And this really, this, you know, story and thrills is something that they've come back to in a few attractions. You know, a story with a thrilling finale. One of them is coming up later. But, you know, there's, it's cool to see. This is also a good old Tokyo Disney special where it is just the, for me, you know, the version of this type of ride, this mix.
It's wholly unique.
Yeah, it's like, its own thing. It's got one of the best facades of all time because it's literally the ride of the mountain. It's inside the park's icon. And in that regard, in my opinion, this is easily the best ride in any Disney park icon in the world.
Yeah, it is one of those things where I was very close to putting this on my list, but because of my criteria, and your criteria is a bit different to mine, I've sort of fallen into the trap of I couldn't find any sort of evidence in my own head when going through. I'm like, what expands on this? And whilst I find it a spectacular attraction, I was like, well, it's kind of the attraction only works at Disney Sea. That whole thing is a package. You couldn't take that package and go put it elsewhere. Like, it would be really odd to take that ride and put it in Animal Kingdom, for example. It just wouldn't work without that volcano. And that's sort of what tipped it off mine. But I can definitely see your reasoning. I think those are all completely fair.
Yeah, often mine are also, you know, not necessarily changes in ride systems or just copy and pasting to a different park, but can also just be a change in, you know, Imagineer's way of approaching a story or a change of, you know, which I feel, you know, this to Radiator Springs Races, that sort of thing. Number two for me, I'm sure you've got it in yours somewhere, Mystic Manor at Hong Kong Disneyland. My number two, to me, this could very well be one of the best stories ever told by Imagineering. You don't 100%. Need to bring anything in. You go in with nothing, no understanding. This isn't a movie. This isn't, you know, oh, you need to have seen and understand this movie. You go in with knowing nothing. You come out 3.5 minutes later of the ride with a fully told beginning, middle, and end story. And the storytelling in it partners perfectly well with the technology to make, you know, just an incredible trackless ride. It is the best, like, a perfect use for the trackless ride system.
I have dot points for this. I was thinking about so much about why this is such an iconic and classic attraction. So it's maybe not the best use of the trackless dark ride system, but it's also the opportunity where they realize, like, hey, we don't have to finish end-to-end in the exact same way. Yeah. Like, they can have all of their trains or their cars, I think they're called cars, just move around in a way that they want. And there's no definitive track. Like, things go off in different ways where if you weren't on that section, then you wouldn't experience that. Unlike Pooh's Honey Hunt, where everyone all sort of goes the same way, it basically creates a train. I think the best use is actually Runaway Railway.
Yeah, I haven't seen much from that.
Yeah, both of us haven't, which sort of explains why it's not on here. But yeah. I think also the fact that they are starting to already open that up in other parks shows that I think it is just going to be a modern classic regardless.
Well, it had been announced for Disneyland before they'd already opened it at Disney World, right? So they've got faith in it.
The other things as well, as you were saying, perfect original Disney characters. Like, this seems like something that you could easily go and see a movie about. Like, those characters, you could just take them straight out of that ride, put them into a movie or a book or a TV show, and it would work. It expands on the sea story. So this is another
Society
ride
of explorers and adventurers.
Yeah, you can get more out of it the more you look into it.
The first one outside the Tokyo Disney Sea?
I believe so.
Yeah, this was the first to take it kind of international, and then we saw it in the years after. Because it opened Society. Yeah, the Society of Explorers and Adventures opened with Tokyo Disney Sea. 2001 is the first, you know, indication of it existing. And then this, we see it heaps now, but this kind of showed that it could work outside the Tokyo Disney Sea quite relatively small footprint that it had.
The other things as well just expanded on Mystic Manor. And this statement felt really enlightening when I wrote it, but I'm not sure if you'll get it. It gives a little and a lot. That makes sense. It's kind of like you can take just a little bit out of it and be like, that was a fun little attraction. But it also is that thing where the more that you look at it and look into it and look at the history and the different details, you're like, wow, it just keeps on going. It's like a babushka doll of detail. It also uses really simple effects in super effective ways.
Oh, like there's that one effect that isn't simple. We don't want to spoil it, the twinkle in the midair. We know how it works, but that is still one of the coolest effects in any theme park ride that I've ever experienced.
It is quite simple though. Like when you actually look into it, it's like, oh wow, that is super.
It's one of those things where it's like, it's simple when you read it, but if you had to try to recreate it yourself, it would be really difficult. Like,
it took so many rerides, and I would specifically do the thing when I was at Hong Kong to try and figure it out, because when they do the effect transitions, it's actually pitch black. But similar to when you go on Space Mountain during the day and it's like pitch black, I would wait until the darkest it would be at night. Hong Kong Disneyland usually closed at 8 or 9 o'clock, so you didn't get too much of nighttime. I would try and find a dark area and just hang out there, and then I'd like chuck on sunnies and dash my way over to Mystic so that my eyes were super well adjusted, and then that way I could see all of the effects transitioning when it was pitch black. And that's where I started to see the way that they do the things, like, as you were saying, the particles flying around in mid-air, almost like a hologram. And you're like, damn, just the way that they did that, just outstanding. The other thing as well as why I think that this is an absolute classic is because Albert, the little monkey that's presented in Mystic Manor, is
so cute.
Perfect for merchandise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you ever see the original concept art where it was like a super realistic monkey? It was like,
yeah, it was like really
don't
gross.
Like that. Yeah.
The thing about Albert and the characters is that, and it's one of the things that frustrates me so much, is that Disney still has the ability to make these original characters and these original stories that sell. Like some of the stuff that you would see go out in droves through the gates of Hong Kong Disneyland were Albert plushes and Mystic Manor shirts and just everything
about
that attraction.
We still hear that Figment is one of the best-selling things even at Walt Disney World now. Which I was trying to think of this when writing Mystic Manor down. I couldn't think of a more recent attraction that is fully original.
I don't think there is.
This is what, 2014, right? Mystic Manor?
I think it was a little bit before that. I think it was 2013, 2012.
Yeah. Which I'm trying to think of anything that's opened since then that has, you know, and a fully original. I guess if we're talking Oriental Land Company at Tokyo Disney Sea, their version of Soarin', but that's not really, like, it's a fully original story,
not
but the ride
the
system's
way,
the
yeah.
same, where this is, you know, fully from the ground up and very much designed around merchandise, as you said, but it works, like...
The other thing that I think makes it just extra next level in terms of classics, and it's something that just every now and then Disney seems to forget that it's like, hey, look at all of your classics. What do most of them have in common? And it's iconic, next level, memorable music.
Oh, yeah.
That is the thing that sort of sets
Danny
them
Elfman.
Apart. Like, yeah,
the
bringing
king.
In Danny Elfman, who made the actual soundtrack for Mystic Manor. And when you think about it, like, I don't know a person who came off that attraction and wasn't humming the da 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 da. Like, it's just, it's basically an arpeggio. They're just going
and the
up
music
and down a scale.
Drives the story in such a beautiful way that we, you know, similar to like how Space Mountain drives the ride vehicle, it feels like.
Yeah.
This music really goes through the story. The music is, you know, different versions of the same music in the different rooms to tie together. You know, it's a good mix of effects. There's some great animatronics, but then there's some, you know, projection mapping, and then there's some real old school practical effects like you would have seen in a Haunted Mansion. And I'm super happy that this park got this instead of the traditional Haunted Mansion, because this
make the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, is the reason, is like just this ride. If this ride was all Hong Kong Disneyland had, it would be worth it to visit.
Yeah, I'd still go.
As well.
It was so just one big queue.
Yeah, like this is the must-do experience at Hong Kong Disneyland in my eyes. And yeah, it's one of the best Disney rides in the world.
Legitimately, without this attraction, I think that we would not see Hong Kong Disneyland as it is today. It basically saved the park, and the park's still not in a good way, but I don't think you can go and knock it down or change it because of that attraction. It is just, like, if they were to come out tomorrow and say, Hong Kong Disneyland's going, we're yeeting it into the ocean, I think you'd have petitions out the wazoo to be like, just take Mystic Manor, please,
pick it up,
and just
put it somewhere
put it
else.
Somewhere else.
Cool. Well, I've only got one left. How many do you have left? I think
I have two.
All right,
one of mine I
you.
Don't think I need to expand on more, but I can say my second last. Mm-hmm. It's in my nondescript list, which would be, and I'll actually be interested to see what your number one is, but actually I think I know what your number one is, so ours are probably going to be different, but my second last mention was Soarin'.
Okay,
my reason being it's sort of no
the
Soarin'
OG
in particular.
Or Soarin' in general. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Soarin' in general, it's I've written the dot point, need we say more? Because it's kind of, it's the music combined with the fact that there's mild thrills, but people who are elderly and people who are young can go on this attraction. It's super effective. It's basically an upgrade of the IMAX experiences.
Which,
like, you can't really expand on it too much else than to say that it is just a modern classic.
I think the big thing as well is a lot of people don't respect, I want to say, Soarin' for what it actually is now, because pretty much every theme park has done their own version of Soarin'.
Yes,
but none of them are as good as the original version of Soarin'. And nothing, every time I think about Soarin', I always remember that little Imagineer man with his little Meccano set that used to be in like every Imagineering documentary in the early 2000s. And he'd be like, well, I built this in my, you know, I went to my kid's toy drawer and I built this little Meccano set of how the Soarin' ride system works. And that flying moment where you fly into the screen, that makes it 1,000 times better than any of the other ride systems where you kind of just push forward or you spin around.
It's oddly spectacular. Like, it is a very simple attraction. You are just sort of moving around a screen, but then they puffed little bits of mist and smells at you. And yes, other rides have done it, but not on the scale and this spectacle that Disney has done with Soarin'. There's nothing like when you're sitting in the seat, the lights go dim, and then the lights start like flashing, almost looking like a nighttime runway.
Sort of, yeah.
And it's got the dun-dun-dun, and you're like, oh, it just hits in the right way. I think it ends poorly, but
yeah,
that's my only thing.
I don't mind the kind of like flying over Disneyland. It's one of the few rides that takes place inside the park kind of thing that it's in. I don't mind that flying over Disneyland. It does look a bit old now because they've revamped the footage to 4K and they have revamped the park footage to 4K, but it's like for some reason the footage in that part doesn't quite work in the upscaling system that they have done. But that leaves us, well, your nondescript category, mine descript category number one, of course. How can I go past it? The Malibuma, the best attraction that's
that
ever
was
existed.
My number one.
That's the only one you had in order, right?
No, so it was all of Pixar Pier. Paradise Pier. It was all of that just
in
as one. I think the most classic iteration of anything. The Malibuma, California Screaming, Golden Zephyr, Mulholland Madness.
How could you go past the orange stinger?
How could I forget the orange? And the sun wheel.
Inside the giant orange when you sat in B-Butts. Oh, masterpiece
Nothing
of themed entertainment.
I'm in the middle of a Disney park than not being able to see the Disney park from your attraction that goes high.
To be fair, like, we're obviously joshing around here, but to be fair, if you're looking at something that influenced the Disney theme park experience for the next 20 years after it opened, the poor form that Disney California Adventure opened in 2001 is probably one of the biggest things that influenced Disney parks in the 20 years following it. But to me, what I think, you know, my number
how you
one.
You go into offices and on the wall, they'll usually have like quotes. Like, just think of quintessential Walt Disney quote where it's like, if you can dream it, you can do it. Which is, Walt Disney never said that, which I think we need to say on
it's
every
in
single episode.
It's
of
from
the podcast.
Horizons.
But you know how you have those quotes on the wall? And Imagineering, they have a really big wall and a picture of Disney's California Adventure from 2001. And it just says, don't.
And then an arrow. That's it. Full stop. That's all they need. The number one for me, it is the quintessential combination of everything they've ever learned. And I think in 2050, people will still be looking back on it. In a way, we haven't seen how it's going to influence the future, but I feel that it could. It is Rise of the Resistance. I considered
that's fair.
Not having this as high due to the possible non-longevity of using the new Star Wars trilogy, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The only people I've heard complaining about it using the new Star Wars trilogy are people who haven't ridden it, because when you're in the moment, the fact that it's based on that is the last thing on your mind, sort of thing. Yeah. Like, and to me, whilst I'm going to say the trackless dark ride
just the trackless dark ride, Mystic Manor is a better trackless dark ride. But yeah. Rise of the Resistance uses the trackless dark ride system in combination with other ride systems, including a motion simulator, including a drop tower. Those combined together is essentially taking everything that Disney's learnt in the last 35 years and combine them into one experience. And to me, that is why this is the modern Marvel. It's taking essentially Star Tours. It's taking Tower of Terror. It's taking Trackless Dark Rides. It's taking a lot of those when we're saying, you know, pre-shows and that sort of stuff isn't a big thing anymore. This ride is mostly pre-shows, and that's actually a good thing. Unlike Flight of Passage, which is also mostly pre-shows, everyone I've heard is a bad
Not
thing.
Not in a good way.
Yeah.
It is that thing where I know this is a weird thing to say, but I wish this came at the beginning of Bob Iger's tenure, because I think, could you imagine the Disney parks if they were just all expansions on
this
Rise of the Resistance? Whereas I just cannot see Bob Chapek doing anything else like this in the future. It's just, it's too risky from a logistics standpoint. The whole thing, just as an operation, is nowhere near as simple as get in this roller coaster, have fun.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so many intricate moving parts that I can see management and executives sort of moving away from it. I am so glad that it was made. I haven't been able to experience this yet, but everything I've seen and I've read and you've told me about it is just spectacular. But I'm interested to see how this will influence the parks moving on, because I thought, like, hey, you know, we're going to get the Avengers Campus equivalent of this attraction. And I kind of think, do you remember when we did that experience at Hong Kong Disneyland where we sort of ran through
the walk through
the Avengers
the
Campus?
Run through.
I kind of feel like that was
a
use case
for,
like, how can we push people through bits of space
it feels
and give
like,
their own story.
The first part of before you get on the ride vehicle of Rise of the Resistance feels very similar to that, where there's walking, then you stop for a little scene, then you walk through another well-themed version, and then something happens, and then you're in another well-themed room and something happens. This feels very similar. Where to me, I don't think we're gonna necessarily get another ride in the foreseeable future that is this combination, the ride itself, Rise of the Resistance.
No.
But I think we could see something similar with Disney expanding the ride experience using pre-shows in a very clever way to make people feel that their 1, 2, 3, 4 hour wait is worth it. Because Rise of the Resistance, the ride portion only is about 3.5-4 minutes. But the entire experience is about 20 minutes. So that, you know, this is the new way I feel we're going to get. We're not going to get a 45-minute ride anymore. Sorry, Ellen's Energy Adventure. Sadly, those days are over. But we're going to get longer experiences, I hope. And I hope this is the test case for that. And if that Avengers attraction gets built, while the ride system itself may just be 3 minutes of Flight of Passage ride system or whatever it ends up being, hopefully the full experience package is like Rise of the Resistance.
Absolutely agree. I think that's the direction that they need to go moving forward. And my number one probably isn't anywhere near as spectacular, but I think is just as important to the Disney experience. And I'd say you'd probably agree, but Toy Story Midway Mania.
Yeah, this was going to be in there for a while for me. But I was tossing up between, I think this is, if we're just talking about Disney theme park rides should be fun, this is one of the best examples of it.
Yeah, this is, and that's exactly what I've put here. It's simple and it's easy to follow. And the interactivity, it's not something where it's like you have to dash around your arms. And I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, that's just not comfortable, as well as there's a lot of accessibility problems.
Like, and I've heard that the Spider-Man one works well compared to like the Lego Ninjago version of the same thing.
Yeah.
The Spider-Man one doesn't work well. So I don't want to know what the you know, the Lego version is like.
Exactly. And so other things that I've written is that it's just fun. Like, there's no massive story or any huge complications. It's just that thing you go on, you have fun. The other thing as well, secrets make it fun to rewrite.
Yeah, that's what
there are lots of little things that you can do that you can expand on for your experience. And the music in the setting is just iconic. It's something that you get in there and it screams, I'm at a Disney park. It's not the sort of quality, simple package that you can get anywhere else. And I think that's what they've done really well is it's not a Rise of the Resistance, but it's not setting out to
it's
be
not
that.
Trying
it
to
is
be,
a
yeah.
simple, fun, intuitive, great, interactive dark ride.
And I think that's a big thing that this is probably one of the most rewritable attractions in the world, just because, and to me, which is weird because I love practical effects. This is probably easily Disney-wise, this is the best shooter kind of interactive ride in the world, even though it's just rolling between different screens.
Yeah. The other thing as well, the other reason that I think it's a classic is it's cheap, it can fit in any sort of custom area, and you can easily expand on it when it gets more popular.
Yeah, more
like
tracks.
They added a third track and when they expanded the Hollywood Studios version. And it went from having like a 2-hour wait every day to like a 30-minute wait at maximum. And it's just that thing where it's like, I can see this fitting in any Disney theme park, which sort of this flows better into my criteria.
I'm
of
surprised they
classics.
Didn't, yeah, build it as part of the expansions to Disney Studios Paris. Honestly, they've already.
I'm surprised they didn't build it at Hong Kong Disneyland. It's
in
such
the
a simple idea.
Yeah, same reason between those two, but I think we've got some bit of shocks in there, but I don't think anything is too crazy in our
See, we find when we work together, we've always had this thing where we're like, we're completely different. But I think we're completely different, which comes to similar results.
Yeah, we have
and
different
that's,
approaches,
I think, why we work
but
well.
Yeah, our end product and end goal is very similar.
Like the conclusions and how we got to what we got into, like, basically 4 out of 5 of ours are the same.
Yeah. It makes
but
sense.
But I think that wraps it up for, our...
Yeah, let us know if there's one that we've missed and there's a good chance that we could have, you know, completely just forgot about one of the best rides. But no, let us know.
Yeah, hit us up. You can contact me at ReviewTimeDom on Twitter.
You can find me at ReviewTimeLuke on Twitter.
And you can find us both at Time Review or Review Time everywhere else. Definitely hit us up to let us know what you believe is your modern classic. But until then, we will be back in a fortnight with another episode of Review Time's Theme Podcast. So we will see you then.
Bye.
Goodbye. Review Time's Theme Podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dom Lacey. A big shout out goes to our newest patron, Tiffany Balbuza, long-term patron, Matt Sakal, and to you, the listener. Review Time's Theme Podcast will be back next week.